In the Warren County Radio Bible School today, we're going to be looking at Paul as he stood before Felix the governor in Caesarea. We find that in Acts chapter 24. And we're going to be looking at a Sunday school lesson on this, written by E.A. Elam for the Sunday schools of November the 22nd, 1925. Before we get into this lesson, I need to tell you that the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m. All are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now let's get into this old Sunday school lesson. There's a geographical note. Caesarea was the Roman capital in Israel, as we have learned, of Judea. It was built by Herod the Great and named for Augustus Caesar. It was on the Mediterranean Sea. It was a seaport of Judah and was about 70 miles northwest from Jerusalem. It occupies an important place in Acts of the Apostles. There the Roman soldiers were stationed. There Cornelius and his household heard from Peter the words by which they were saved in Acts 10 and verse 14. And there Paul appeared before Felix, Festus, and Agrippa. Finally, from there, Paul was taken to Rome, having made his appeal to Caesar. Here are some helps and hints for the teacher. In the last lesson, we left Paul standing at the head of the castle stairs, bruised and suffering from the cruel treatment of an infuriating mob, but anxious to return good for evil in teaching them the way. His speech is recorded in Acts chapter 22. Here he gives a brief account of his life and his conversion. This speech aroused again the fury of the mob. Seeing this, the chief captain protected Paul by having him brought into the castle. There he ordered a centurion to examine Paul by scourging. But Paul protected himself against this by his rights as a Roman citizen. On the next day, Paul was placed by the chief captain before the Jewish council in order, if possible, to learn the truth of the charges against him. Paul threw the council into confusion by saying that he was a Pharisee as to the hope of the resurrection. The clamor and contention between the Pharisees and Sadducees was so great that the chief captain again rescued Paul by having him taken to the castle. The night following, Paul was encouraged by the Lord, telling him that he would testify again for him in Jerusalem, and not to fear. A plot was laid by the chief priests and elders of the Jews to kill Paul, which plot was learned and revealed by Paul's nephew. The chief captain again preserved Paul's life, this time by sending him away from Jerusalem by night and on to Caesarea. The chief captain was Claudius Lysias. He wrote to Felix concerning Paul, stating the case clearly and truly, except the statement about him having learned that Paul was a Roman. He did not rescue Paul at first because he knew Paul was a Roman, for he learned this afterwards from Paul himself when he was about to scourge him. And then Felix. Felix was the Roman governor of Judea at that time and received Paul, promising to hear him when his accusers should come. And Paul was kept in Herod's palace. Now God overruled in these affairs. It was God with Paul, and the whole affair, from his arrest at Jerusalem to his imprisonment at Rome, was overruled to Paul's good and to God's glory. Had Paul been set free, either at Jerusalem or Caesarea, he would have been mobbed by the Jews. God makes the wrath of men to praise him. When Jesus gave the Great Commission, sending the apostles into all the world amid severe trials and sore persecutions, he said, "And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world," Matthew 28:20. When the Lord appeared to Paul and commissioned him to go to the Gentiles, he promised to deliver him from the people and from the Gentiles, Acts 26:16-18. And the Lord was with him. Now the charges against Paul. Paul's accusers were not slow to follow him up. For after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with certain elders and with one orator, Tertullus. And they informed the governor against Paul, Acts 24:1. Tertullus was as a prosecuting attorney, probably a Roman employed for that purpose. Paul was then brought in before his accusers when Tertullus began his speech in the following artful and flattering manner. "Seeing that by thee we enjoy peace, and that by thy providence evils are corrected for this nation, we accept it in all ways and in all places, most excellent Felix, with all thankfulness." That's Acts 24:2-3. This was spoken to gain Felix's favor in the present case. Tertullus then proceeded, "But that I be not further tedious unto thee," and indeed wasn't Tertullus being tedious in all of that praise. He says, "But that I be not further tedious unto thee, I entreat thee to hear us of thy clemency a few words. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of insurrection among the Jews throughout the world, a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who moreover essayed to profane the temple, and whom also we laid hold, for whom thou wilt be able, by examining him thyself, to take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him." And the Jews also joined in the charge, affirming that these things were so, Acts 24:4-9. Four charges were preferred against Paul. One, a pestilent fellow. That means a mischief maker and pernicious character. Number two, a mover of insurrection among all the Jews throughout the world. That would include Asia Minor, Macedonia, Achaia, and wherever he had been. Number three, a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. An upper epithet applied to Christians. And number four, a saying to profane the temple. It was the policy of the Romans to protect for the sake of peace and order the religious rites and national laws concerning nations. Hence they would have punished Paul for profaning the Jewish temple. The Jews who affirmed these charges were true, and were the high priest and elders who went down from Jerusalem. They went there for this purpose. Now, in the explanatory notes, we have Paul's defense before Felix. Let me read to you from the text. Acts 24:10-11. "And when the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, Paul answered, 'Forasmuch as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I cheerfully make my defense, seeing that thou canst take knowledge that it is not more than 12 days since that I went up to Jerusalem.'" When permitting Paul to speak for himself, Paul began in a courteous and happy way. Felix had been governor sufficiently long to become acquainted with the customs and laws of the Jews, and would understand the nature of the charges against Paul and his explanations, and would also recognize the truthfulness of his statements. Hence Paul says, "Forasmuch as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I cheerfully make my defense, seeing that thou canst take knowledge that it is not more than 12 days since I went up to worship at Jerusalem." One of the commentators said the best mode of reckoning the 12 days is the following. First, the day of arrival at Jerusalem in Acts 21:17. Second, the interview with James in verse 18. Third, the assumption of the vow in verse 26. Fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, the vow continued, which was to have been kept 7 days, being interrupted on the fifth of the 7 days. Eighth, Paul before the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 22. Ninth, the plot of the Jews and the journey by night unto Antipatris. And 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th, the days in Caesarea, on the last day of which the trial was taking place. The point Paul makes is that he had not been in Jerusalem for several years previous to this time, and all he did during these 12 days could be easily accounted for. No honest, conscientious man fears investigation. Now let's look at verses 12 through 15. And neither in the temple did they find me disputing with any man, nor stirring up a crowd, nor in the synagogues, nor in the city. Neither can they prove to thee the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way, which they call a sect, so serve I the God of our fathers, believing all things which are according to the law and which are written in the prophets, having hope toward God, which these also themselves look for, that there shall be a resurrection, both of the just and of the unjust. Paul denied all these charges, especially the third. He did not attempt to profane the temple. Hence they did not find him in the temple disputing with any man. He was not a pestilent fellow raising insurrection among the people, either in the synagogue or in the city. He challenged them for the proof. Neither can they prove to thee the things whereof they now accuse me. The burden of proof always rests upon the accuser. If one is now accused in court of any crime or misdemeanor, his accusers must prove the charges against him to be true. As to the charge of being a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, he says, "But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call a sect, so serve I the God of our fathers, believing all things which are according to the law and which are written in the prophets, having hope toward God, which these also themselves look for, that there shall be a resurrection, both of the just and unjust." In this, Paul shows that his course is the only one consistent with the law and the prophets. To believe the law and the prophets, as both Jesus and Paul so often proved, forced one to accept Jesus of Nazareth as the Son of God and the Christ. Paul was honest, open, and sincere, and always made a frank and clear statement of the issue between him and his fellow Jews. His course was consistent with what the law and the prophets said should come to pass, and was loyal to what these taught, while that of the Jews was not. He showed that his persecutors believed in the resurrection as well as he himself, but that it must come through Jesus. And then we read in Acts chapter 24 and verse 16, "Herein I also exercise myself to have a conscience void of offense toward God and men always." He states that he had intentionally committed no wrong. He was a grand man. He had always lived so as not to be condemned by his own conscience, and he has always done that which he conscientiously believed to be the will of God. When he persecuted the church, he barely believed that he ought to do so. His conscience was not a correct guide. God's will is the standard and guide, but his conscience always bade him to do what he conceived to be God's will. Such men God loves, and he always helps them in his providence to learn the truth. Now we're going to continue this in our next class, beginning in verse 17.